Maybe your organization isn't in a regulated industry. Maybe you don't think operational resilience is something that applies to you. But what if we told you that some of the principles of OR can still be used to improve your program? Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 123 of the Resilient Journey podcast, presented by the Resilience Think Tank. This week, we're joined by Jillian Catalano, Senior Director of Enterprise Resilience Risk for RBC. This week, Jillian and Mark talk about business continuity and operational resilience in the financial sector, and how those principles can be effective in your organization, regardless of its size or industry. Jillian explains how threats and risks related to technology recovery, third parties, and geopolitical matters are shaping the strategies of their resilience program. And now, here's our host, Mark Hoffman.
Jillian, lovely to meet you. It's so nice to have you on the podcast. Let's start off by having you introduce yourself to the audience.
Sure. Thank you so much, Mark, for having me today. I'm really excited to chat with you about resilience. I guess just to provide you with a bit of an introduction on myself and for everyone joining. So I've been in the risk management industry for, quite a while now, since 2006, starting as a risk analyst in the insurance and risk management industry. I think not one of my friends understood my job at the time, especially because it, you know, in 2006, we were in pre-pandemic time. I used to always refer to, I don't know if you remember, but Ben Stiller was in a movie called Along Came Polly, and he was a risk analyst. And I used to always refer to that movie so that people could sort of connect the dots and understand what I did. So after being a risk analyst, I moved into the risk consulting practice, and my job there was really around developing various types of programs for clients in all industries. So I worked on pandemic planning, crisis management programs and training, business continuity, enterprise risk management. It was a really fun role because I got to see many different companies and a lot of different programs. Mm-hmm. And from the consulting role, I moved over to a client of mine at the time, and I was offered a role or an opportunity to build what we called a resilience services function. That's what they were calling it at the time.
Wow, okay.
And it was really to build out a global program, which included things like business continuity, crisis management, health and safety, and then corporate security as well.
Wow.
It was pretty interesting. So I had a lot of fun for the, I guess it was about 7 years that I was there building and maturing the program. The really interesting part too is when I started with the company, it was about 3,000 employees. And by the time I left, it was over 10,000 employees. And it had really undergone a lot of change. So it was really neat to be a part of the, you know, building of that resilience program as the company grew. And then from there, I moved to RBC, so a large global financial institution. And when I came to the bank, my role was around the director of business continuity management strategy and standards within the second line of defense. And then most recently, I guess I was in that role for about 2.5 years. And then I've most recently moved into the senior director of business continuity and strategy and governance. So that's really heading up the second line of defense function. So things like governance, tools and enablement, monitoring and reporting, those sort of elements of the second line responsibilities. And we're part of what we call at RBC, the Enterprise Resilience Group. And as you can imagine, that's primarily made up of business continuity, fraud risk management, third-party risk management, and then technology and cyber risk management as well. So it's making it a lot of fun.
You said a lot of things in there that I want to unpack. And I like that about having interesting people on the podcast, because we're going to get into a couple of questions that I hadn't planned on asking you, and I hope you don't mind. The first one is, back around the same time you were working on pandemic planning, mm-hmm. I was also working on pandemic planning. And then, of course, 13, 14 years later, we actually had to endure a pandemic. And I'm wondering, be honest now, if you don't mind, how good was your 2006 pandemic plan against the 2020, you know, COVID-19 pandemic we actually went through?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And the pandemic was interesting timing for me because I had done all this planning my entire career. And when the pandemic hit, I was on maternity leave with my second child. So it's really interesting because from home on maternity leave, I was playing out everything I had done over the years to prepare for this pandemic.
Right.
It was like the Super Bowl for us, I think, you know, in the resilience and sort of risk management industry that we had been planning for years. I remember as a consultant going in and talking with senior executives and them looking like, you know, looking at me like I was crazy, trying to get ready for this pandemic. And then it actually happens. And I'm thinking through, you know, spending time with my brand new baby, and I'm thinking about the pandemic and the planning that's being done at work, the invocation of all the plans. And it was very different. It played out very different, I think, from all the planning that we did.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of it was around worrying about mass amounts of deaths and large absenteeism rates from work, which is a big element in the planning that we did back from, I guess, 2006 to probably
exactly 2012. I couldn't agree more. That's exactly what my focus was too.
Yeah. And I mean, we would look at percentages of absenteeism from work and plan around that. And
100%, yep.
That's not really what happened. And again, I wasn't there, but I do know that for us and our organization, you know, people were working from home. Yes, they were sick. Yes, they were caring for others at times. But because we were all working in isolation, for the most part, our employee base, you know, stayed fairly healthy and was able to continue work. So it really changed, I think, the way that everything played out for us. And of course, that was factored into our lessons learned and our post-incident review. And I think the way that we may plan for things in the future as well.
And the other thing I wanted to ask you, those who are in the risk management industry would have understood what you were talking about when you're talking about second line of defense. But I think a lot of people in traditional business continuity from that perspective, from that background, might not be as familiar about that. So just very, very quickly, can you just explain what you mean by the various different lines of defense?
Sure. So in at the bank, we have three lines of defense. That's the way that our bank is organized. And so I play a role within the second line of defense. So the first line of defense are the business owners. So they really are the risk owners. And then within our organization, we have what we call BCM advisors, and they are part of the first line of defense. They are out there working with the business as part of that first line of defense to create plans, processes, procedures to make sure that we are resilient and we can, you know, withstand major events. In the second line of defense, which again is my team, we are out there providing oversight and challenge. So we are working with our partners in the first line to make sure that they're adhering to the policies, the standards, the procedures that we set out, and that they're doing good risk management. So are there, you know, are there things that we could provide feedback on? What are our recommendations from a second line, again, to really improve and mature our business continuity, risk management, and our resilient programs as well? So that's really the sort of the first and second line of defense. And then, of course, we have the third line of defense as well. And that is internal audit. And they play a crucial role in the program as well, coming in and providing the audits, examinations, assessments from sort of outside of the BCM program ownership and teams as well. And we, of course, incorporate a lot of their feedback to focus on that maturity and building out a really solid program as well. So we all play a key role, I think, just very, very different roles.
Yeah. And thank you for that. That was a really clear explanation. And Jillian, you did a great job there. I was looking back through the different episodes that we've had, your 123rd episode.
Wow.
I've never done anything at all that focuses on the financial sector. And so I'm really excited that we're going to get a chance to talk about some of that. But you mentioned going all the way back to 2006 that you were doing consulting for a whole bunch of different sectors. How different is risk and resilience in the financial sector compared to, you know, something else?
First of all, I can't believe it's been nearly 20 years, I have to say again. So it freaks me out every time I think back to, you know, how long it's actually been that I've been working in the industry as well. So even when I go back to my consulting days, working with different clients, different industries, there still was that sort of financial sector piece. So it's been quite a while. I think, you know, working with clients in different industries from manufacturing, healthcare, real estate, and then of course, financial services, I think the practices of risk and resilience, I think, are all similar. But what is really different, I think, are the drivers and the priorities based on the type of industry. So overall, for any company in any sector, we're really all working towards the same goal. We're all trying to build a resilient organization that can withstand disruptions, disasters of all kinds, and we're trying to ensure that we have the capability, I always say, the capability to bounce back and move forward when an event does happen. Mm-hmm. And that's really built through organizational resilience. I think people are so focused on the term operational resilience right now that sometimes we forget the importance of just pure organizational resilience and just making sure that all of our different risk functions and domains are really working together to prevent, prepare, and respond to incidents and disruptions. Like, you know, it could be third party risk management, technology risk management. We all really need to work together. And I think for us in the financial services sector, a lot of what we're doing and how we're doing it is driven by regulation. So they're out there providing the requirements and the guidance for what good risk management should look like and what we must be doing. Now, you know, that being said, I think everything that we do for our enterprise resilience risk programs at the bank are anchored in what we think is right for the bank. So being regulated really changes things for us in terms of how we treat risk and resilience. But I know that, you know, depending on the type of company and the industry, there will be different emerging drivers for business continuity risk as well. And depending on what environment you're in, but for us, I guess, and other regulated industries, there is a notable difference for sure. And it also creates more awareness for the importance of risk and resilience, you know, putting in time, money, resources into this area. And for us at the bank, for our top executives, operational risk management is definitely a priority. And again, it's not because of the regulators, it's because they understand and they see the value in really good risk management. They've lived through things. I know we talked about COVID and how that played out. They've lived through things like that. Telecommunications outages in Canada, yeah. We had one fairly recently, wildfires. They've all really seen how the planning and preparedness comes together to reduce the impact to the bank. And I'm thankful to be working somewhere where this is definitely a priority as well. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think it was maybe 6 or 7 years ago, there was an explosion in the streets in Toronto, something to do with an electric panel or something like that, that forced you guys out of your office for a while, didn't it?
Yes, that's right. So I wasn't actually at the bank at the time, but that was a huge event for us. And I think it made it very real for everybody. We were out of there for quite some time, had to renovate the building. We were able to respond and recover and resume. But again, it really highlighted the importance of making sure that we had these plans in place.
Right.
And it's interesting too, because I think part of it is also, you know, you use the example of the 20 King Street incident. And I mean, for us, I think it's It's different in the financial services industry because it's simply around the criticality of what we do as well. So for a large financial institution, we provide critical services and processes, and we need to be able to continue operations, no question. And I think bringing it back to your question again, you know, the difference in the financial services industry in comparison to maybe other types of organizations or industries is, you know, we're putting processes on hold or disruptions causing outages. They may actually be able to halt activities for a period of time.
Right.
And that's not an option for us and a lot of what we do. And not to say we don't prioritize, but we are definitely a critical service provider, and we always need to keep that in mind, especially for our clients.
Yeah, 100%. You talked about your driver, you know, not being the, you know, the regulatory body, but we are starting to see more of a regulatory push in North America. We know, for example, that operational resilience is mandatory for financial institutions in the EU, but we're seeing that more here too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And operational resilience was, to me, it was kind of the buzzword in 2023. And I actually think it's probably going to continue into 2024. It's always interesting to me when people talk about the concept of operational resilience and it being new, but really for us at the bank, it's not a new concept. It's just now that we're really following certain requirements and formalizing the operational resilience life cycle. And of course, you know, exercising it and all those other critical elements. We do, as a bank, we have operations in the EU. So the operational resilience regulations are mandatory for us. We have a team that's responsible at RBC for the development and implementation of the program, the operational resilience program, globally covering all the different regions. So definitely starting in the EU, but continuing on everywhere. And I would say that, you know, while we saw regulations in the UK first, we're definitely adopting the requirements globally. We're kind of adjusting based on regions and unique requirements. Most recently for us in Canada, and this is top of mind for me because it's a huge focus for us right now, is OSFI in Canada, one of our Canadian regulators, has just put out a draft revised guideline for operational resilience and operational risk management. So the revised guideline really sets out regulatory expectations for institutions like RBC to make sure that they're enhancing their operational resilience and management of operational risks as well. So I think for us within the financial industry, and specifically us as a large bank, we know we operate in a complex risk environment with increasing threats posed to all of our mission critical operations and activities. And again, like that, you know, the pandemic situation or natural disasters and cyber attacks, the regulators in North America are now really going to be setting the expectations for operational resilience to strengthen our ability to prepare for and recover from these severe disruptive events. So I think the important thing to note here about sort of the revised guidance is that operational resilience, and this is sort of me connecting it back to BCM and business continuity risk management as well, is that operational resilience is really built on a foundation of good, effective operational risk management. Mm-hmm. And that includes things like business continuity. It includes crisis management. And I know that there will be increased expectations in these areas for Canada as well. So our team is spending a lot of time on assessing our programs and documenting all of our action plans for any required changes that we need to make. And we're trying to wait patiently to find out for the timing of implementation and expectations as well. But I think it's a really exciting time in the regulatory environment, and especially for us in Canada as well, with a lot of these updates being made. It's clearly top of mind, and it's clearly very important for everyone. So it's good to see.
And how much insight do you have? Are they getting similar requirements in the US as well?
Yes, absolutely. So we're starting to see it all across North America, I would say.
Okay.
And RBC as a bank is definitely starting to, again, do a lot of these gap assessments to make sure that operational resilience and our programs are where they should be. We're following the regulators' guidance. We're having lots of conversations with our regulators on, you know, where we are in sort of our operational resilience journey and formalizing everything as well. So it's definitely an exciting journey. Lots of work, but very, very exciting for operational resilience.
I know that OSFI, you mentioned them here in Canada. I have a client in the financial sector, so I had an opportunity to start working us towards operational resilience, and their definitions were really clear. I you don't hear this very often, but I actually thought that they did a really good job in explaining what they were, you know, looking for and how they were trying to raise the standards. You know, we talked about the regulations, we talked about the good work that needs to be done. And obviously, like you said, they're trying to get us to think about the different risks and threats that financial institutions face. So what would you say are the top emerging drivers or threats related to business continuity and business continuity risk from a financial institution's perspective?
So that's an interesting question. And it's one area that I think of often when we're working on things like our business continuity, risk management reporting. What are we seeing in terms of top and emerging drivers of business continuity risk? And of course, specific to RBC and the banking industry. For us in the financial services area, top of mind is, and I, you know, I keep referencing incidents, but it's really increasing incidents related to technology, related to third party and climate risk. We're really seeing an increase in the number and the severity of incidents. And it's important for us to be in a state of readiness at all times. So we need to factor these types of risks in and make sure that we're planning for it. Geopolitical pressures, the impacts of geopolitical risks and events and conflicts that are impacting the ability to continue business from a disruption of, you know, supply chains, resources, and locations. Another area that we're seeing growing risk is due to increased work from home since COVID. So there's a reduction in work area recovery seats is what I'm hearing from the industry. And there's more people are working from home, and they're working from home, you know, perhaps permanently or hybrid. And assuming that work from home is a solid strategy for business continuity. And it may be one recovery strategy, but we need to think more about what can we do to have a more robust strategy, more resilient strategies? What if there's a telecommunications outage?
Exactly.
What if there's a regional natural disaster? Work from home is not going to be a viable solution. So we need to make sure that plans are in place to do things like transferring workload or perhaps relying on third parties that are out of region, maybe getting our own people out of region. What is our plan to do that? So the sole reliance on working from home is definitely presenting a risk in many organizations from what I'm seeing. The other emerging driver of business continuity risk, I think that's important to call out as well, is concentration risk. So concentration of things like technology, people, and infrastructure, it's really created failure points for recovery, especially where there is no redundancy or out of area or region planning as well. So my team and my peers and their teams are constantly considering these types of drivers and how they change over time. And I think this is what keeps the role and being in resilience so interesting, because things are always changing. The environment we live in, from, you know, climate change to political unrest, and that has an impact on my job and all of the teams in these resilience type functions at the bank and then in the industry in general. But it really keeps us on our toes because we're constantly identifying new risks and we need to come up with new solutions to address these risks. We need to be flexible and adaptable. So it's an interesting question. And these risks are often top of mind for us in what we do.
Your answer there about concentration risk was really insightful for me because I have multiple clients going on right now. And that risk, and frankly, if I'm honest, I didn't know what to call it, but that risk applies to at least half of my clients right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something that we have to really pay attention to. So with all of those things as the backdrop of what you just described, what's your strategy or area of focus related to business continuity and resilience for the rest of this year?
So I thank you for this question too, because this is also fresh in my mind right now as we plan for the remainder of 2024 and going into 2025 as well. I can't believe it's the 1st of March today. That's absolutely crazy.
It's lovely.
yes.
Not going to lie. It's lovely.
I know. It's beautiful. So we've spent a couple of days a few weeks ago, all of my peers in a room within Enterprise Resilience Risk and working on our strategy. And one of the things that for us, we were trying to keep in mind for the year and into next year is just making sure that we have a really integrated approach to resilience. One of our priorities is just to make sure that, you know, we're leveraging each other's skill sets, experience in the different risk domains. So again, going back to my peers and partners in third-party risk, in technology risk and other areas as well, operational resilience, of course. So that's a big one for us. A couple of other areas that come to mind for my team within business continuity risk management is focusing on what we need to continue to really mature and adhere to regulatory changes and requirements as well, being really proactive in everything that we do. In 2024 for us, the focus is going to be to digitize and modernize our BCM program. So it's not necessarily about changing requirements or the program itself, but moving us from our current BCM tool to a new one in 2024 as well. So we're very excited about that. I think it'll create some efficiencies for the team and, you know, automate and integrate a lot of the program elements as well. So I think that will be very, very exciting for us. It'll also help us to enable operational resilience. So it'll kind of help us facilitate that formal process of the operational resilience lifecycle and integration with business continuity risk management as well. And I think, you know, lastly, I do want to mention the importance of oversight and challenge. I know you asked me the question earlier about what does the second line of defense really do? Because not everybody understands the first, second, and third line of defense and kind of what they do. But for us and within the bank, this year, we are really going to be focusing on our oversight and challenge. It's such a critical role, and it helps, you know, our ability to withstand these disruptions and continue to move forward. And my team really needs to continue to provide that solid oversight and challenge. And ultimately, it'll contribute to the improvement of the program and doing really good risk management for the bank.
I really like that. I'm going to follow up with you another time on oversight and challenge because I think that's something worth digging into. And, you know, we've talked about some pretty interesting things and some pretty deep topics, but now I think I'm going to challenge you with the hardest question. So imagine this scenario. You're the keynote speaker at a large event. You're introduced to speak. And as you're walking to the podium, you have a song playing, your walk-up music, if you will. What song would you pick and why?
So I love this question. It's a hard one. The song I would pick is Break Free by Queen, which I, you know, it comes to mind because first of all, my kids are obsessed with Queen right now. Every song
good parenting
by Queen.
On your part.
Yeah, right. It's good music. I think any song by them is so good, but this one in particular, that would be my song. I don't know if it's appropriate as a keynote speaker, But I think it's a fun, energetic song. I think it reflects my personality, and that's the song that I would pick. So I love the question, though.
I love the answer. Anytime anybody comes on this podcast and talks about Queen, they move right to the front of the line as far as I'm concerned. Jillian, amazing, great conversation. How can people connect with you?
So people can connect with me through LinkedIn. Jillian Catalano is my profile name. But I would welcome the opportunity to connect with anybody that wants to talk about resilience. I'm obviously very passionate about the subject. And yes, welcome the conversation.
Excellent. Jillian, thank you for doing this. I appreciate you being here with us.
Thanks so much for having me. It was a great conversation. I had a lot of fun. Thanks again, Mark.
We want to thank Jillian Catalano for joining us this week and talking about operational resilience and good practices. The Resilient Journey is a Resilience Think Tank production. We have another great guest lined up next week, so join us, won't you, as we continue our resilient journey. I want to break free.